defining engineering, but I don't really know if we have a definition to begin with. So defining engineering, defining technology, and really thinking about the people dimension of change, I think are some of the interesting parts that popped up. So,
Or just to keep it consistent.
Keep it going,
It may be something new.
It may be something new.
Go back to the public health versus the medicine. Yes. It may not be engineering.
Maybe something entirely new.
Yes. So as you were speaking and this issue of culture comes up, I started thinking about even the way we speak in here, and we all seem to still accept that engineering is hard, and do we make it hard or soft? Is it reduced or not? And my experiences, and I think there's a lot of educational research also, it's like nurture versus nature, and a lot of the barriers I come up with my own faculty are they believe in nature, like it's in your nature to do this. And we've done some things to try and improve our retention, and we find if we have an initial class where we say, you can do this, we don't care where you started from, and you nurture just a little bit more, then it's really an issue of maturity and confidence, which I think you said, like the signal to noise ratio. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I think is unique about engineering that gets it perceived as hard, which I think it actually makes it easier, is that you can verify your solution. You can solve an equation and say the answer is 6. And you're like, no, you messed up. It's 5. That hurts if you're not mature in what you in who you are and confident. You're like, oh well, I'll just keep trying. Eventually, I'll get better. Where in other disciplines, you can get a C and you can feel like I'm average and I can do better. So I don't even know what I'm saying, but we have to stop thinking, even in this room, that engineering is harder than anything else, mm-hmm. and that it's just getting our students in the right place to be able to do anything they want to set out to do.
I want to respond. Nice set of comments, but in particular, I want to pick up in terms of effort versus inherent skill sets. And just point out the biological analog, which I think is increasingly relevant. We now know that nature influences nurture, and nurture influences nature. Biology is showing us that, and I think we need to keep that in mind when we think about, as we carry that example on, recognize then there are opportunities then, as we approach our students in engineering, to recognize that there are some opportunities there as well.
I'm Ann McCants. I'm an economic historian at MIT, and I do a lot of work in social science methodology, and I wanted to speak to the anxiety issue directly. Obviously, a lot of liberal arts students say, I'm not good at math, it makes me nervous, or what have you, the kinds of things that you've identified. But in fact, a lot of my students say to me routinely, well, you know, I really can't write. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't want to take these classes that you're offering. You know, MIT is going to force me to take some of them. But they have tremendous writing anxiety. And they start from the presumption that because I'm a historian by choice, you know, writing must be easy for me. And I think one of the most valuable things that I can say to my students is, are you kidding? Writing is the most painful thing I do. I would prefer to wash the kitchen floor on my hands and knees than start a paper. I've done it. And I think they're extremely surprised by that. There's the expectation that, well, you know, if you're a humanist, it's because it's easy and you do it naturally. Whereas if you're an engineer, it might come to you, but it's still really hard. And I think this follows up on that previous comment. We need to get as far away from this sort of hard-easy dichotomy as we possibly can and teach our students that every single cognitive activity that they could engage in, whatever kind, is, of course, difficult. That's the whole point. And you have to try it and fail at it and then try it again and get better at it.
Yeah, that's a yes. Totally agree with that. One of the things that we're doing that I didn't mention is we're also asking the faculty to think of themselves more as coaches and mentors. And so if you're in that frame of mind, when you see a student struggling with writing, you can tell them, I struggle too, all right? And so you set up the special relationship with them, and they better understand it, that, yeah, some of this stuff is hard. If it was easy, anyone could do it, right? That's the saying. But, you know, you look at the end goal, but having the attitude that you're more of a coach and a mentor and helping the students through these, especially in the early years of their career in the discipline, will give them the confidence they need to go on themselves, which is what we're trying to do, right? Make themselves made... learners.
One of the things as well, I mean, the point about having the students understand that what I'm engaged in is difficult and it's not you, the student, who is dumb. By the time we normally work through a example or a solution on the board, it's very elegant, very neat. It goes from point A to point B. There's no mess in between. Is having faculty take the time to say, well, here's where I went down a blind alley,
yeah,
and then I came back. Just 2 or 3 seconds. Can make a tremendous difference to a student.
Just want to come in now to reinforce the points that were made by two speakers here. First of all, just to say that I have taught art students radio astronomy, and I have taught engineering students philosophy and history. So I think I know a little bit about it. And the third thing is, I was responsible for training graduates in all subjects to try and teach. And in all cases, the scientists find the arts most difficult. They find it very difficult to grasp with sociology. They find it very difficult to grasp psychology, I think because it's making them look at themselves. And the finest essay I ever had in the radio astronomy course came from a philosopher. The other thing to say is you don't need a terrible lot of mathematics to do these courses. We overrate the quantity of maths that's required. But I want to make one more, much more important point. How do we change teachers? Now, one way of designing an integrated course is to use a key concept framework. And I've always found that possibly the easiest way to do it. But how many engineering teachers know about key concept frameworks? How many engineering teachers have actually been trained in teaching? And all these are central to this whole debate about changing the culture. Is there a profession of engineering educator? And if there is a profession of engineering educator, should they know something about education?
That's exactly right. And one of the things that we're trying to put together right now is a sustainable professional development plan around teaching and learning for our faculty, both those that we have and those that we will be bringing in. Because if you don't do that, you can't really get to the level of integration that we want, which is across the entire curriculum and about 200 mm-hmm. faculty in our college. So, you know, how do you go about doing that? Well, you know, in a classical research university, you give release time the first 2 or 3 years sometimes for someone to start their research program, right? And that's pretty common. Why don't we do the same? Give faculty some release time to become much better teachers and teach them some of these techniques and methodologies that you can use to improve the classroom experience. And that's the only way that I can see doing it, because I think we've all done this. We teach the way we've been taught primarily, and so we don't know what we don't know, and they have to be exposed to these different ways of doing things. And it has to be done through a serious professional development. So part of what we're doing is we're taking money and we're investing in the faculty. Bringing them on campus early is one of the strategies when they're hired, so that over the summer they would get some of those professional practices that we would like them to do. Assigning mentors the first semester, and then team teaching the second semester, for example, to help them, ease them into this culture that we want within the college. Those are the strategies that we're trying. We're way too early to know whether that's going to work or not.
I could just make a comment that it's not just teaching that has to be improved, it's learning. Yes. Students, somebody said, students are amazed anybody can write a paper. students don't know how to deal with difficulty. I had a math person doing a workshop with very frightened math students, and I asked him to be just very frank. And one of the older women in the group said, I feel terrible when I make a mistake, fraction, arithmetic, or at whatever level. What do you do when you make a mistake? And he gave the most marvelous answer, which is that of a confident learner. He said, I find my mistakes interesting. They are windows into my thinking. That's exactly the way I feel as a writer, when a paragraph or a page or a whole chapter isn't working. Why isn't it working? That's a very interesting question. Or if you can't solve a problem. We have to give our students the means by which they go outside their comfort zone. By the time they come to college, they have a comfort zone. They have prejudices about their own capacities, which have been, of course, reinforced by teachers or by parents. To educate, in my definition, is to lead oneself out of the comfort zone. The reason I fret when I can't solve an engineering problem, if I try to, is because I don't know what else to do when the strategy that I rely on doesn't work. If we can give people more strategies and the permission to use multiple strategies, we will get more results. So it's not just faculty retraining. It's training students to think about their own capacities as more malleable and something they can work with.
All true, although I will observe that every other profession on the planet requires some form of continuing education for its practitioners, including engineering as engineering practitioners, but within higher education, we have no such explicit requirement. And that makes it difficult when we have people who are trying to learn from us.
I think she's ready to talk.
Hi, my name is Jane Lear. I'm also from Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo. I think you all were given a lot to talk about in your panel, so I think you've been doing a fantastic job. But I wanted to make sure a couple of other things were on the table. First is, there have been, as some people have mentioned, countless efforts to integrate science, technology, and society explorations or liberal arts explorations of science and technology into the engineering curriculum in the United States. And many of them have been driven by engineering educators themselves. And so it seems really important that we more clearly specify how we're different than and or learning from those previous efforts. The second is, one of the questions that you were asked to address was about efforts to basically increase the diversity of folks participating within STEM fields, including through outreach. And I don't think anybody yet has mentioned the new next generation science standards in the US, right, which include the substantial component on engineering design, which is such it's such an entryway for these liberal arts studies of science and technology and society relationships as part of the engineering design process in K-12, providing then a transition to this exploration starting with the first year. The third thing I just wanted to quickly mention, there's been discussion as well about female students in engineering, and again, this question of the role of the liberal studies in engineering opportunity. And my survey research at Cal Poly has shown two things of potential interest here. One is that our female engineering students aren't actually choosing to be engineers until their junior or senior high school. Mm-hmm. They're making the decision to apply to Cal Poly as an engineering major, sometimes as late as the semester in which they're applying. And so these are highly academically qualified, right, female students who have a variety of opportunities in one moment choosing engineering education as a pathway. I just wanted to share that because I think often we think of middle school, elementary school, but high school is a fantastic mm-hmm. place to work. The other interesting thing about that survey research is it's shown that female engineering students, particularly female students of color, are much more likely to enter engineering because of a desire to make a difference. And so again, right, the possible intersections for liberal studies in engineering there are incredible. my last point is there's always lots of discussion about flipped classrooms when I attend things like this. And so I just wanted to highlight that many of us within the liberal arts have been teaching in a flipped model for generations, right? We assign readings that we expect students to do prior to coming to class, and then we engage in discussion and problem solving as part of that curriculum. And don't operate, right, within a traditional lecture mode. And so I think that's an awesome opportunity for folks coming to flipped instruction to really learn from liberal arts pedagogy and the research that's gone into it. So thank you.
Just wanted to make one comment, agree with in general what you said, but with regard to the next generation science standards, and that's a critically important potential pathway to engineering understanding. I say potential because, at least thus far, many of us have some concerns about how they're defining engineering design. And, you know, my big fear, I don't mind if a student chooses not to become an engineer out of informed consent, but I have deep concerns if what they receive is what they think is engineering isn't engineering, and they choose not to go that way and tell all their friends and family not to go that way. Mm-hmm. So, just in terms of as we look at next generation science standards, paying attention to how they're interpreting the engineering component is important.
Just one comment about why girls will tend to choose engineering later. And this really goes against the notion that you have to catch them early. Girls have to, this is just data, have to emancipate themselves from their parents' expectations of who they are and what they will be before they can make choices. And it's very often not until post-puberty, 15. Until then, they are more obedient, and they don't want to disappoint their parents by saying they're going to do something, you know, very remote from their parents' expectations of what girls do. And so it's not K-6 for girls. It's 15, 16, 17 where you want to work. Thank you.
Martin Krieger, USC. I think one thing is the nature of the resistance of your faculties to change. It goes something like the following. It was good enough for me, it's good enough for you. If I suffered through problem sets and whatnot, and look how successful I am. All right? That's called internalization of the aggressor by the analysts, psychoanalysts. All right.
By the feminists, too.
No, by psychoanalysts. Oh. And it's well before feminism. And the point is, the proper line is, I suffered through this crap. I shouldn't have it be done to my children. Mm-hmm. Right? But the usual line is, you know, it was good enough for me. Look, I turned out to be a great football player. And my mom beat me up. I can beat up my kids. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's the current thing, Adrian Peterson or whatever it is. But it's a more common phenomenon. And the real question is, it's first of all hard to remember how awful it was, you know, when you went through all this stuff. But to acknowledge that and to say, I wouldn't want to do it to my students, is a very important act in parenting or in teaching. And it seems to me that's a deep issue. In other words, until people can recall that what they, you know, stuff they were put through might have been the right thing. The other point, which is related to this, is people who have lots, engineers who have lots of experience in the world, you know, they work in industry and government, whatever, probably do not think the same way as their colleagues who spent most of their careers in the department publishing, you know, first grade articles, because experience shifts what they think. But I think if it's good enough for me, if it was good enough for me, doesn't mean it's good enough for my students. That's the big revelation.
Yeah, let me just add a couple more that we've heard. We're already doing it. So, you know, they have a writing paper that they require. But, you know, they're not an English teacher, and so they do the best they can to grade it. My favorite one is, because I'm the dean, it's like, we're going to wait until you retire. I'm going to wait you out. I've literally heard that many times. And then the other one, of course, is I have tenure and academic freedom. Don't tell me what to do in the classroom. That's the culture you're dealing with, okay? And it's very ingrained at times. Now, with that said, there's a lot of faculty that really do resonate with this, and you don't focus on the negatives. You pick up on all the positives that you can, and you build off of that, and that's how you get there, because there's plenty of reasons to not do this, okay? You have to start figuring out how to do it, and when you start doing that, you'll find opportunities, and you'll find islands of excellence, and that's how you build islands the momentum.
So because I have a microphone, I'm going to jump in and add on that. So this is based on dissertation research. One of my students looked at four different universities that vary very much in terms of what they're all about, and asked and talked with faculty who were either in the process or like very far along the process of making changes to their curriculum based on the Engineering 2020, which has many of the same ideas with this. And some of the things that pop out of that is that all of the faculty, regardless of their success, totally believe in the Engineering 2020. They value it. They believe in it. They think it's a great idea. But what they struggle with is it has competing commitments with other sets of values that they have. So some of the other values that they have are, my job is to cover the content. There's no room for that. They have an identity crisis value that happens with, but that isn't what I was done. You know, that wasn't my experience, so I don't know how to go there. If I go there, am I still an engineer? And they have an identity crisis. They don't want to look incompetent talking about stuff. They, quite frankly, don't feel comfortable that they know it at the level of somebody else that they could think does. And so in many ways, they say that's somebody else's problem and they hope somebody else takes care of it. Or they sort of have these little edge connections. They sort of play around the margins. And so I just want to bring that up in the sense of, you know, there is this very interesting faculty shift story that changes why they engage in the kinds of approaches and what they think gets to be on the table about engineering. But they really struggle in the sense that they have these competing values. They actually like these ideas. They believe in them. But it doesn't connect to who they are, it doesn't connect to what they know, and they don't know how to do it. And so, like anybody else, they make a choice not to. So,
thank you.
I wanted to introduce a couple of ideas that... Sorry, I'm Natalie Dermogenko. I'm a professor at NYU in Steinhardt. And I was involved in... 20 years ago in the NSF-funded engineering consortiums and looked at, you know, the thousands of exit interviews that tried to capture the attrition rate of women and minorities in many engineering. And, you know, the one theme song that came out after looking at that over and over was that people were leaving at all levels because they weren't helping people. They wanted to help people. Right, this was this naive kind of way of what I thought made me review that it wasn't a problem of the attrition rate of women and minorities in engineering. It was a massive social protest of women and minorities in engineering saying that we want to do something that we know is of value. And I think this is where the branding issue comes in, because we take one fuzzy area like liberal studies, and my eldest daughter got into the Global Liberal Studies program at NYU, and after the interview, she turned to me and said, "What is liberal studies?" Right. So it's about as well defined as engineering. So we get two fuzzy terms, and we mush them up, and we're not actually claiming what I think is really the implicit agenda here, which is in order to address the challenges of the 21st century, the really important global systems engineering and socio-ecological systems engineering and the emerging issues that come with a destabilized climate and the extraordinary technical challenges that we face. This is the kind of education we need. And that's what's actually reversing the attrition rate of women and minorities in engineering, is because this is how they can solve the world's problems. Again, very naively stated. Mm. But I see it dismissed over and over again when engineers take on big and important problems as solutionism, you know, fix-it-isms, you know, this fact that engineers aren't trusted to take on these most important problems, but in fact, if not us, who? Right. So I think there's a branding issue about the massive climate challenge and socio-ecological systems engineering and an explicit claim on the territory of addressing the challenges of the 21st century, that this is the sort of education that we need, and to address the popular conceptions of both liberal studies and engineering, and to attract the best and brightest, which is what the space race of the 21st century is what I think we're building here. Humbly, I would say that. So it's a positioning question, issue to address. I think many of the questions that you brought up about how do we incite the real ambition and excitement for faculty and students alike.